Hey, Jews, you know what they say. After Memorial Day, it's okay to wear white and to work blue. So there's your warning. If you don't like off-color humor, then have a Coke and a smile and go listen to another podcast.
The food thing is right. Like if Ben's like, I'm hungry, I'll bring like way too many snacks.
Let's go down.
That's probably because of the Holocaust. But I'm serious.
Hello, summertime Jews and non-Jews. This is Unorthodox. I am your wizened but white-wearing host. Actually, I'm not wearing the white post-Memorial Day
wizened,
white.
But white-wearing is like, is that a KKK thing?
I was just about to say.
Is that Grandmaster?
I'm the wizard white-wearing.
I am Mark Oppenheimer, joined as ever by Stephanie Butnick.
Hi.
And the white piqué Lacoste polo-wearing Liel Leibowitz.
A Freilicha 50th anniversary for the Six-Day War.
Six-Day War.
To you and to you.
I feel like you're getting ready to play like racquetball or cricket at like a very waspy country club. Mm-hmm.
Or with Buffy.
Another way of saying that is you're dressed like Mark when he was 9.
Right.
Yes, baby Mark.
Our Jewish guest this week is Canadian Jewcaster Fred Kaur, who hosts The Point, which is a web talk show series that brings straights and gays together to just see what sort of fireworks go off. And it's a really good show. And he and I, we're buddies. We're phone buddies. And now we're going to be in-person buddies because he's coming into the studio.
It's called IRL buddies.
Isn't that an old subway line in New York City?
It's the IRT. Yeah. I know that from the crossword.
And it's very different from the IRS buddies, which you don't want to be.
Or the IRA buddies.
Or the IRA buddies.
Let's talk to Ruth Gilligan about that.
Yeah. And our Gentile of the Week, Liel, do you want to say it? Liel's so excited for our Gentile of the Week.
I've actually never seen him this excited in life.
Yeah, he's really like, can I just say his nipples are hard?
Guys. Rock hard. The Gentile of the Week is Commander William Thomas Riker, first officer of the USS Enterprise, and later commanding officer of the USS Titan.
On for those of us who are grown-ups and don't live in sci-fi land.
If you have to ask that question, turn the podcast off for the second half, because you know what? You don't deserve
it. It's a Star Trek, guys.
The first rule of Star Trek is
you don't talk about Star Trek. I'm also told his name is Jonathan Frakes and he's like an actor or something, but I absolutely refuse to believe it. I'm talking to William Riker.
Do you figure he's going to be at home on his phone wearing that unitard?
Oh, definitely. And he's calling in on like the space intercom. Is
Can
that a
I
thing
tell you,
from Star Trek?
It was like an inch away from me, A, dressing in uniform, B, bringing a tricorder, which I have.
What's a tricorder?
Oh my God.
Is it like a lightsaber?
Listeners, now you know. Now you know what I have to face every Tuesday.
Oh my God.
Absolute like ignorance of the worst kind.
Okay, so what's up, Jews? What's been going on?
I spent 2 lovely days in the other Zion, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Yeah, I've been there.
It's amazing.
It's astonishing.
What a place.
Hard to leave.
So I have boundless love for our Mormon brothers and sisters for so many reasons. I think they're, you know, wonderful, if I may. But here's one reason that I didn't realize before to how insanely great this religion is. So you walk in to Temple Square, right, which you've been. It's the center thing in Salt Lake City. And there's a visitor center. And the visitor center is like the most gorgeous building you have ever seen. And when you walk in, there's like a phalanx of insanely gorgeous women smiling, genuinely very, very happy to talk to you about your faith and theirs. And I'm thinking like, that is exactly how you do religion. Like build a really nice building, put a bunch of really attractive people. You walk in like, hey, want to talk about God? It's like, I want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. It's all good.
And our version of that is you touch down in the promised land at Ben Gurion Airport.
That's right. And
you
someone's
fight
like,
to get your luggage off the carousel.
Did you pack yourself?
No.
What synagogue does your father go to?
You be strip searched by a 65-year-old like guy who used to defuse bombs.
Actually, when we on Birthright, we went to the Israel Museum and we had the most amazing tour guide, this young woman who like was just so great. And basically we all walked out and we're like, are we all in love with her? Like, is everyone in this group obsessed?
On Sid's Birthright trip, she fell in love with their tour guide, who was some dreamy, I don't know, you know, middle-aged, but still quite capable of playing James Bond type. And, you know,
that's the point, right?
Right. We have our moments. But the thing about the Mormons is, see, here's the thing.
We have Mormons. Where
here's the
we?
Thing. Jews have it. And I've been to Salt Lake City, as I told you. I've studied Mormons. I've given a talk at BYU.
Guys, I went there on my teen tour. Yeah. I'm in this. I can play this game too.
But the thing about them is, whereas Jews kind of have it, but it's scattered and diffused and you're lucky if you bump into it, the Mormons take the sort of promised land, like the chosen people thing that we've got. And then they organize it.
That's
like
right.
People with MBAs from Harvard, like Mitt Romney. Like they organize it, they spreadsheet it, and they make sure that it's always the experience you have.
That's exactly
and
right.
And that's what they've got.
It's like a bunch of consultants.
Fantastic.
That's exactly right.
I freaking Optimizing.
Love it. Dear Mormons,
we'll trade.
This podcast is available for the right sponsorship. It could be on Mormonox really easily. Talk to those consultants. There's a really big return on the investment here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Give us a call.
So you were in Salt Lake City, Stephanie? Top that.
So my nephew Noah is still the cutest thing in the entire world. We were off for Shavuos last week, so I spent like pretty much every day with him.
Noah Max.
And I have to say, like, people are pretty upset. Like, I upset someone last week, and I just wanted to address it on air. There was a blog post in the Times of Israel, and it goes thusly. And it's hard to tell what podcast he's talking about and which host, but try to figure it out. On a recent episode of a Jewish podcast I listened to, the youngest of the three hosts proudly announced her new nephew's Hebrew name, Mendel. She said that the baby was being named for his grandfather, Milton, so they chose a Hebrew name to match. It's not what I said. This is a regular tradition, after all, to match a non-Hebrew name of a past relative with a phonetically similar one from Torah and text. There's only one problem. Mendel isn't a Hebrew name. Let the record show I am not hating on the Mendels of the world. I happen to really like the name Mendel, but it is a German and Jewish name, not Hebrew. As a Jewish onomatologist, one who studies proper names, it's my duty to burst some bubbles. Consider my bubble bursted.
Well, except you were kind of psyched that he identified you as the youngest member of the podcast.
No, I thought that he could have at least named the podcast.
Or the person.
Okay. I'm surprised he wasn't like this young girl, the girl host.
This female.
Well, also, he's completely full of it because Hebrew, like other languages, can evolve. I mean, if he means there's no name Mendel in Torah, fine. But there is something called modern Hebrew, which some people actually speak, and they can name their kids Liel. They can invent stuff like
that's
Liel.
Right. My Hebrew name is a completely fucked up, made up name.
But the basically
predicated in part on Lee Marvin from the Dirty Dozen. So
but his argument basically expands to kids don't know their names, Hebrew names, until they get bar mitzvah. Jewish continuity screwed. Right. No one knows biblical Hebrew names
intermarriage,
anymore.
Intermarriage, dogs,
like,
and cats.
They named him Mendel. Like, I think we're fine on like keeping the Hebrew thing, the Jewish thing intact.
How much Jewier do you
he
get?
He is the next rabbi.
He's the rabbi. Well, so this guy is a what in that? Onomatopoeist?
Onomatologist.
Onomatologist.
That's not even a thing.
No, he's actually a Jewish onomatologist.
I think we should give this Jewish onomatologist a Hebrew name of his own. kind sir, your Hebrew name, since you're a listener from now on, is Shmagegi Shmucky Face Cohen. That's your new Hebrew name. Take that.
I think one of my daughters
up from us.
I think one of my daughters named one of her bears Shmagegi Shmucky Face
Cohen. Isn't the bear like what was it? Like Angelina Ballerina Sparkle Motion.
That lasted like a week. I don't know. The sort of ongoing bears are Timmy Bear and Farlop.
Angelina Ballerina Chayamushka. Greatest.
Praise be.
Well, I didn't go to Salt Lake City, and I didn't get insulted in the Times of Israel. But I did crash my dad's 50th college reunion, where I was recognized.
This is a peak Oppenheimer thing.
Yeah.
Where I was recognized by my voice, by a listener of our show.
Like, and literally across the room?
No, I mean, I was already at the table. She was there with her husband, who was a classmate of my dad's, though they didn't, I think, know each other. But We're talking to her, and then she realizes, oh my God, you host that podcast I used to listen to. She stopped listening to it at some point, and I didn't quite get why. Anyway, it's the sister.
I love that she like told you that.
Yeah, it was very unorthodox.
Show I
listener.
Once listened
yeah,
to.
I used to.
The show I don't listen to anymore.
And then there was a whole like, she's explaining podcasts to the assorted septuagenarians around the table, but she was lovely. We hugged it out at the end. I forget her name, but it was Marty Gold's sister, because her brother Marty Gold goes to my shul and is married to Rena Cheskis Gold, mother of Danya Cheskis Gold.
Guest.
So this is Danya's aunt was at my dad's 50th reunion with her husband, and we had a long talk. And basically what it came down to is she loves unorthodox. She loves all of us. She knew each of us well. You know, she felt we were family. But she feels we don't do enough for the older listener, for the senior listener. And I said to her, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, you don't want us anyway. And I said, no, we really do want you. What can we do to keep you?
And
her answer was, well, you don't want us. We're too old. You want young people. And I was like, we want all people. Like, we really do. What can we do to keep you? And she said, well, I'll think about it.
In news of the Jews, Kirk Douglas is still 104 years old.
So anyway, I'm trying to think. We have to do something for Danya Cheska-Skold's aunt to bring her back. We're going
to
start a movement. This is the summer
say,
of bringing back.
My grandparents listen to the show every week, but they call it the program.
The program. Nice.
Which I love. Nice. And I'm going to start calling it
the
that myself.
Program.
Your grandparents watch Frontline on PBS.
No.
They watch Antiques Roadshow like
nope,
my in-laws.
Nope.
And they listen to an Orthodox.
My parents are obsessed with The Daily Show. They're the only people I know who still watch the Trevor Noah version.
Yeah, I was about to say.
They watch.
that's the equivalent of Frontline.
They watch Full Frontal with Samantha Bee every week. They are like really proud.
Hep cats.
Yeah, they love it.
Okay, so there was my dad's 50th. Then there was my cousin Debbie's 70th birthday.
Cousin Debbie. I wish I had one of those.
Who's very cool. And I bumped into my cousin Meredith, who really does love our show. She listens to two kinds of podcasts: true crime and unorthodox.
I
like, she has
that.
A whole.
Should we do some true crime?
Yeah,
unorthodox.
She's a realtor, and she says I'm in the car a lot, showing houses, and I have two kinds of podcasts from the. Every true crime podcast and unorthodox.
Today on Unorthodox, who really killed our Lazarov?
And she particularly likes Stephanie, and she says that my puns are third rate.
That's
thanks,
all
Meredith.
Completely
love you,
correct.
You back.
So love to Meredith. In other news of the Jews.
There's other news besides what's happening
to us. In other
news
of Wonder Women besides Meredith, Wonder Woman was banned in Lebanon. Discuss.
I love it so much. First of all, because, you know, they ban it and then it goes on to make like $780 billion in like 36 hours. Even more than that. You know what, Lebanon? Hi, this is Liel. If you're listening now, let me just tell you, your worst cultural stereotypical like nightmares are true. An Israeli young woman could kick all of your asses. You know, one of these nights, you're going to be sound asleep and you're going to hear some sound, Hezbollah. And then you're going to open your eyes. You know what you're going to see? You're not going to see anything because it'll be Wonder Woman's invisible fucking plane. And then when it becomes visible, you'll see three letters on the side of that plane. IAF, motherfuckers. Be prepared.
Wow. Is this the sequel?
That.
I would watch that.
Oh, my God.
To be fair to the Lebanese, though, aren't they, like, from what I hear, they're the best people in the world invaded by the worst people time and time again. Like, I've heard that. Before they were destroyed by assorted waves of, you know, Syrian invaders and Iranian money and bombs and what that, like, there was no
sure,
more beautiful
amazing, but
there was no more beautiful country in the Middle East than
they're
Lebanon.
Still, you know, controlled by and large by our enemies and start a war with us.
But Wonder Woman's going to take care of that.
Wonder Woman's going to fucking take care of all of that with a lasso. In heels, I'm telling you.
It should be said that none of us has seen the movie yet.
I know,
right?
It's embarrassing.
But can I tell
it's
you?
It's amazing, apparently.
She is so. The movie is probably fine.
No, it's like she comes from this all-female land where there's no men and they're all fight. Like they're, it's like this actually like idyllic paradise for like these like these I'm with her women. We're
right,
like, I want to go to there.
About that, about these women in the movie. So they hired all these like really great American actresses like Robin Wright or people like that to portray her relatives. And love Gal Gadot so much, but let's be honest, her accent is, you know, is her accent. So everyone in the movie speaks in the same accent. Like Robin Wright would be like, Diana, very important you don't go to fight.
It's
with
like that fake Mediterranean.
It's so
like
great.
They got all the Americans to do your
all
Israeli
the
accent.
Americans
no, I think they
are
do,
doing my Shlomo accent.
But they do
every
like,
single one of them.
What that like foreign-ish accent
right,
where
right.
they like could be an ancient England, like
right.
that you're also
falafel for yeah. dinner tonight again before
Diana.
We fight the Amazonian is very good.
I mean, to me, this is a really big deal because the only Israeli like female like these celebrities I can think of. Okay, you have Bar Refaeli, you have kind of Natalie Portman, who doesn't really you know who's basically American
from
at
Long
this
Island.
Point. Yeah, but
yeah.
She was born there. But I think this is really an amazing cultural moment where she's a freaking superhero, right, on American screens, and she's an Israeli actress. Like, it's when has this happened?
My respect and admiration for her is so intense because she's not only just, oh, I'm the Israeli actress who made it big, oh, Bar Refaeli, I'm dating, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio, I'm a model, whatever. Like, this week, Wonder Woman weekend, right? Like, the biggest week of her career.
Wonder weekend.
She posted a photo of her and her daughter, eyes covered, lighting Shabbat candles. Like the hometown,
she's a regular Ivanka Trump.
The hometown pride that
yeah.
Ivanka Trump. Please,
sorry,
for shame.
Sorry, that's the only other person I know
you
who
mean
does that.
Yael.
You know, it's so insanely heartwarming to see someone so proud. So here's another funny story. So Israel being the most provincial place on earth, right? When the movie came out, the three tallest towers in Tel Aviv had a light display. They lit up their windows to spell
Congratulations, Gal Gadot, our Wonder Woman. We're so proud of you. Like a 38, you know, word congratulations. And, you know, she could have been like, oh, that's cute. She wrote in Hebrew on Facebook this really long message saying, I am moved to tears. When I was a young girl living in some fucked up suburb of Tel Aviv, like I would come to the city to like party. And like every time I saw these towers, like they symbolized for me like the big city and the possibilities of like my dream. And now you guys are giving me all this love and I'm so grateful for everyone and I love you. And, you know,
I can't
love
wait
it.
Three more be movies proud. In the franchise. And she'll be like, I'm from the Middle East. I'm from abroad.
Speaking with this accent. Like, hi, my name is Giles.
Robin Wright is my mother.
Nothing will top Wonder Woman this week, but I just want to two more quick News of the Jews stories. First of all, and I'm going to flip these because I want to end with Barbara Streisand's dog.
No spoilers.
The penultimate story is that according to the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, a Palestinian baby who had been seriously injured in a car accident was breastfed by a Jewish nurse when he refused to take the bottle. We want to give a shout out to the nurse, Ula Ostrowski Zak, and the 9-month-old boy at Hadassah Ein Kerem Hospital. This is a story that has no meaning whatsoever, but it's the kind of feel-good story that
everyone's like, we're going to be okay. I mean, it's actually really sad. The baby's father was killed in the car crash. The mother's still in intensive care, I think. And the baby wasn't battlefield. Like, the baby was just distressed, obviously. But everyone, I don't know. It's a really nice story.
It's a nice story.
Somewhere in the world, Katy Perry is like, see, I told you we don't need any borders and we're all love.
And finally, our last News of the Jews story, Barbara Streisand's dog, Sammy, died. It was a 14-year-old Coton de Tulliard. I guess that's a breed. I just want to take this opportunity, number one, to say I still don't like Barbara Streisand. I don't understand.
You're not going to say a nice word for Sammy, a person who just lost...
Look,
this woman lost
I'm sorry
she
lost her dog. As a dog person who recently lost a dog, I'm filled with boundless compassion for Barbara Streisand for having lost a dog. That said, I don't like Barbara Streisand that much, and fuck gourmet dogs. Like, Jews are the rescue dogs of the world, and I understand if you have allergies. I absolutely understand there are reasons that people get gourmet dogs, but if you're Barbara Streisand and you don't have a dog allergy, you should be rescuing a half pit, half, like,
I don't like this
bulldog.
You should be doing. Like, I don't like the people who are like,
nah, you should be
no,
doing.
No.
The only acceptable answer
Barbara
to what
Streisand,
kind of dog you have should be like, brown.
Yeah. Barbara Streisand can do whatever she
I realize
wants.
We've just walked into your kitchen because I forgot that you guys had gourmet dogs in your family, Stephanie.
And we don't have gourmet dogs. We have terriers.
Yeah. I'm just saying
They're
should be rescuing dogs.
Yeah, of course. I agree with that. But I don't think you can say – I don't like those people who are like, you did this wrong.
Fuck gourmet dogs.
Also, can we
– Also, like, I can't – you just seem to – you say you have compassion for this this loss.
Fine,
but
I don't
see it.
Fine, I don't.
It makes you a big hypocrite
can
to
I
say
ask a bigger
she should
question?
Have this dog. Also, I was so sad about my dog, and we talked about it all the time, but she is not entitled to that.
Can I ask a bigger
question?
That
is the
question?
Ultimate hypocrite move.
I had a better dog.
What? This is like a side
dog.
Of you I do not like.
JJ was better than Sammy.
I don't
Sammy.
Know. I kind of like that side. That's like a very –
It's like this.
That's a very Wonder Woman side. Can I ask like a serious question though?
Yeah, fine.
What is – could someone explain Barbara Streisand to me? That's, I genuinely don't get it.
We should get to our guest. I'm so much more excited to talk to Fred
we'll
than
Barbara
I am to talk about
episode.
Barbara Streisand.
That's probably right.
Send us your email defending Barbara Streisand and we'll mock it on the
explain
air.
Barbara Streisand to me.
Send
I just don't get it.
Calling Mark out for – Not right, showing the love
Fred
he
in.
Requested.
Just so
other
you know,
people.
I dated Barbara Streisand.
You did not 14, date Barbara Streisand. You were 14.
People who need people are the luckiest people.
Our Jewish guest this week is Fred Kerr. He's a journalist, actor, and media analyst, and he is the producer and moderator of The Point, which is a web series and talk show that brings gay and straight men together to talk about the issues of the day. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
We've actually already met.
Yes.
At our live show in Toronto.
Yes.
Those of us who, you know,
those of us
made
who were
the
at
flight.
The show.
Who made it to the
at,
show.
Was it Beth Sedek?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my drag name.
Beth Sedek.
That is really, that's amazing. So what have you been up to since then?
Well, actually, it's exciting because we are coming up to our season finale of The Point.
It's a fun show. There are a lot of people on it.
You mean like there are six panelists?
Yeah, like six three. People. We're yes. three and we can barely like have a show.
Yeah. Well, because you're all Jews. I'm the only Jew on mine.
Plus, so, they're Canadians. They're sort of like, I'll just wait.
politely until
so,
you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You go ahead.
Give us a sense of what the show is like.
Well, like you said, it's well, our tagline is bringing gay and straight men together to see what happens. There's a long history of a relationship between gay men and straight women. Starting all the way back from
Will and Grace.
Will and
Grace. All the way back
to the way that gay men admire and respect strong women, hence the
Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls and Barbara Streisand, who I will defend.
But not yes, Margaret Thatcher, should. Oddly.
Not, well,
oh, I disagree. I'm sure know? There is a gay cult of Margaret Thatcher.
I would
There's
agree
some
with you.
Fusty, yeah. Gay, Tory, dandyish men in their Savile Row suits who adore Margaret Thatcher. You don't think?
I do.
Dandy-ish.
I don't know.
Thank you for perpetuating a stereotype.
Every stereotype. They have their pinkies raised as they sip tea.
With China.
That's right. Well, that's just what I – that's my English. I mean –
yes. Not to push another stereotype. but here's the thing. The idea was gay and straight men, right? We have these – straight men have these preconceived notions about gay men, and gay men have preconceived notions about straight men.
So what are some of those? What all my preconceived notions are about you. What do you think about us?
Well, about straight men?
Straight men, yeah.
Well, I mean, the stereotype, and I know this isn't true, but that you're all into sports, you're all bros, you all fist bump each other.
That's about right. Go on.
That there's a certain level of disdain for women, not necessarily an out there, like, a Trumpian way of looking at women, but even in subtle ways, right? And that's actually why there's this gay male sort of love, if I can call it that, or affection for strong, bitchy women, right? And I use the term bitchy as a positive. I voted for Hillary Clinton, not because she is a woman, but the fact that she is a strong, competent, intelligent
pushy woman,
right. I mean, that added to the mix. That wasn't the reason.
The fact that you're a Canadian who voted for Hillary Clinton just fueled Republican voter fraud theories, but you are a citizen.
I'm a dual citizen. Yeah. I grew up in Brooklyn. In fact, my father went to the same high school as Bernie Sanders.
Midwood? No, which one was it?
Madison.
Madison, okay, got it.
And then I moved to Vermont, and that is still where I vote, and Bernie Sanders is my senator.
Wow. Well, I like that everyone either went to that school or went to Erasmus with Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand.
There were
we're
two high schools and all the celebrities.
To be fair, some of them went to Midwood with Woody Allen. So what are you finding on your show? Here's my question. I've watched a lot of episodes of The Point. I really love it. One of the questions I have is that
some of his favorite episodes are The Point.
But there is sometimes, and I'm sure you feel this too, there's the problem that if you put together some gay-friendly straight guys and some straight-friendly gay guys, these days we kind of all get along.
No, yes. And in fact, when we were putting together the panel for the show, like our regular, we're kind of modeled after shows like The View.
The View, yeah.
So when you put a bunch of people together and you put out an audition call, right, people are going to self-select. So, straight guys who see an audition notice who, most are in some sort of a performing art, whether they're stand-up comics or actors, and they want to audition for the show and it has gay content and it's about gay and straight men, right? Some Trump-voting, conservative, gun-toting, whatever, is not going to come out and audition for it. I mean, they're likely not to be actors in stand-up comics anyway, but maybe that's a stereotype, but...
Do you ever notice Mexicans? What's up with that?
So the panel is straight and gay men.
Straight and gay. It's half
and
gay,
they
half straight.
They alternate. They go
very good.
Gay straight. Gay straight. Yes. Gay straight. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. When you're talking about
observation,
the stereotypes you imagine straight men have, is there like a level of homophobia in there that you think of these? If you're talking about jock culture, who disrespect women, like, is there an assumption that those people don't really like you?
Yes. And that's because homophobia stems from misogyny, right? I mean, it's fear, although that's not quite the right word, even though we call it a phobia, but it's a disdain or a dislike for the feminine. I mean, it's interesting, on your show last week, you were talking about toxic masculinity, which ironically or coincidentally...
Which is the name of my band, by the way.
That's your drag name.
Yes. But this week,
Leal plays triangle in that band, just to be clear.
I do a mean tambourine.
No doubt.
This week on our show, we have our guest is a cultural anthropologist who has actually done research on masculinity and, interestingly, masculinity as it and femininity as it relates to drag culture. But this issue of toxic masculinity comes up on our show as well, and it feeds into what you're talking about, which is that sort of hyper masculinized, is that the right word? Ideal, which is actually presented so expertly and effortlessly by Donald Trump, which sees a negative in the feminine, in the perceived weak. Misogyny is all about that. It's all about disliking and putting down, keeping down that which is feminine, not just women, but anything that is perceived as the feminine. And gay men, historically and still today, are perceived as the feminine in many contexts.
You know what's interesting is your show, I was watching your show and you recently had that conversation about pronouns, about the professor
yes.
at the University of Toronto who yes. was going all gender neutral. And you guys were suitably bitchy about that and funny about that, I thought. And there you are in an all-male space. And I was thinking, like, I bet there are people to your left, so to speak, who think you're just a bunch of bros because you're not all in the tank for the latest postmodern stuff. You're a little skeptical of some aspects of trans culture. You're all male. Like, I wonder if there are communities that are like, oh, those are just a bunch of like right wing toxic masculine assholes.
Well, we did get some blowback from that online. Blowback, that sounds dirty. We got some blowback about that, and so we continued talking about the subject and actually invited a gender non-binary trans activist on the show, who is behind this campaign called the No Big Deal campaign, which is about educating people about gender neutral pronouns.
But you sometimes feel like the old man, and they're like, I remember when it was hard for gay people to come out.
No, absolutely. This idea of bringing gay and I feel like the old man. I feel like Bernie Sanders now. I remember when it was hard to even get people to say I was gay. No, where now, I mean, when you talk to younger gay men, the struggle to come out as gay and have those relationships between gay and straight men is much easier for them than, I mean, am I that old? I don't know.
How old are you?
I'm turning 50.
Mazel tov.
Well, thank you.
Let me ask you a question. This is a really dumb question. It just occurred to me the other day thinking, you know, about you. Is Canadian homophobia different than like our version here?
Like, is it nicer?
Is it more polite? Like, sorry, I found your choices revolting and immoral. So sorry.
Your Canadian accent.
That's my Canadian accent. Yeah. It's top notch.
He's Israeli and he can't even do it in Israeli accent right. So he's
although I love Shlomo. I love Shlomo. Can you do the rest of our spot here?
Only if you do the rest in Bernie Sanders' voice.
That is fine.
Listeners,
guys, I can do that.
Don't do it. I'm a little Shlomophobic.
And I'm Ashkenormative.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
We all are.
Yeah.
So
that's our problem.
Is it a different? Because here I get how Americans express, you know, that. It's like, Toby Keith, fuck you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We just fucking smash you into a chain link fence somewhere outside the club.
I know. I mean, you know, awful.
You looked at me, you fucking fag. Like, how do they do it in Canada?
Yeah, you do that so well. Thank you.
Yeah, you really went.
Can I move that a little too easy?
The funny thing is, words I've literally never said. Like, that came out of some deep acting class somewhere.
The political culture in Canada is more polite, less personal in terms of like political attacks. You would never have before we started recording, you mentioned my spot on the O'Reilly Factor. Mm-hmm. You know, may he rest in peace. May the O'Reilly Factor rest in peace.
You were once interviewed by Bill O'Reilly.
Right. Yes. He called me an honest man. I expect you to do the same.
You mean President O'Reilly from 2024.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And the loofah is running as his vice president. The political culture is more polite in Canada. It is there are fewer personal attacks. You would never have an O'Reilly or that kind of a figure in Canada. There are journalists and commentators in Canada who have tried to be. There was a television network that kind of fashioned itself as Fox News North, but it failed because Canadians don't buy into that hyper hateful, hyper masculinized.
So the Canadians said, Rick Moranis, stop it with this hyper masculine bullshit.
Exactly.
Mike Myers, stop him.
Yeah. Drake is his.
Well, so that's my question. I was actually thinking about Drake when you said that.
Obviously. Drake, aren't you always thinking about Drake?
Yes, basically. But as his rap has gotten so much more like rap, like I feel like he started out and he was like, I'm a nice guy rapping. And now he's sort of doing the regular thing. And are Canadians turned off by that at all?
Can you speak on behalf of all
Canadians?
Well, yes, exactly.
About Drake?
Okay. In Toronto, it's almost taboo to say that you're not a huge fan. It's sort of required that you like Drake.
He's like your Gal Gadot.
So you have to. I'm not going to diss Drake.
No, I'm not asking you to diss Drake. Done saying, I'm done playing. Last time is on the outro. Stuck in the house, need to get out more. I've been stacking up like I'm fundraising. Most people in my position get complacent. Want to come places with star girls and they end up on them front pages. I'm quiet with it, I just ride with it. The moment I stop having fun with it, I'll be done with it.
All right, our Gentile of the week is a man who fanatic assholes like me introduce solely as William Thomas Riker, first officer of the USS Enterprise and later commanding officer of the USS Titan. He's also, I'm told, a wonderful actor named Jonathan Frakes, but I refuse to believe that. Sir, my first question is, how much do you hate people like me who only refer to you as a role you played on a television show some years ago?
If it weren't for people like you, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No, but I imagine there's some line that's being crossed when, like, you know, overweight, middle-aged men, you know, kind of sidle up to you in conference to be like, and so in the novel Inzadi that details your relationship with Counselor Troy before the series, you're like, just please walk away. I don't want you in my space right now.
It takes a lot to skeeve me out, to be honest. It's mostly like a day three or day four of Dragon Con when the smelliest Klingon from Thursday is still in his full rubber turtle head and sweaty suit, and you can sort of feel him approaching for another photo op, and your eyes water with the smell of urine. that's rare, really.
And you're like, I should have done Jane Austen adaptations. So you start directing in 1990, I believe, and you direct one of the all-time great episodes of the show, in which Data, quote unquote, gives birth to this android. What is it like to, you know, be in a show for like 3 years, work with colleagues, and all of a sudden say like, okay, well, now I'm going to be your director?
Well, for 3 years, I hobbled with them to give me a job as a director. So I shadowed all the directors. I spent 300 hours in the editing room. I went to pre-production meetings, post-production. They wisely were reluctant, but as a result, I was so overprepared finally to do an episode of TV, it has served me, and I'm a much better director than I ever was an actor. And the people that I work with are, dare I say, mishpucha. So they took the piss out of me. We had the most rowdy, misbehaved group of adults on that set. And it only got worse when I directed, because it was, you know what that's like when you work with friends.
So basically, yeah, if I tried to direct Stephanie and Mark, they'd
nope,
be like,
not
doing that take. Fuck you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Your dad was a pretty well-known book critic for the New York Times for a long time, right?
Yes. Oh, the late, great James R. Frank, New York Times and the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
What was that like growing up with a father who was always reviewing books? Was he a really...
Yeah, it was somewhat intimidating. I said to him one time, he taught Hemingway and Faulkner and Joyce, among others, Beckett. And I think I was in high school. And I said, I think I'm ready to... I'm ready for Ulysses. And he said to me, you can't handle Ulysses. Which I thought was a great line. And after he died, I was lucky enough to get his teaching editions of most of his books, one of which was Ulysses. And I had a moment where in my little library, I took the Ulysses down off the shelf, and I thought very warmly about my father. I said, oh, this will be great. And you know, I was in my 50s, and I thought, I'll read Ulysses now. And I opened it, and I did a few pages, and what did I think? I still can't fucking handle you listening.
Dad was right. So he lived to see.
He was right, still right.
He lived to see Commander Riker ascent, right? He saw you in your.
Yeah.
So what did he think of Star Trek as
he saw
text?
Me in my space suit.
Yeah. Did he recognize it to be, you know, right up there with the great narratives of humankind, was to him it was just like a show?
He was not much of a sci-fi guy.
But it's Star Trek. At the risk of sounding like a total fanboy even more, it's more than a sci-fi narrative, right? I mean, it really has become this big cultural touchstone that is studied and analyzed and revered as a kind of you know, almost like a metatext. That never translated to him. He never.
He was very proud and very encouraging, and always was in terms of that as a career choice. And the fact that I ended up getting a good job only, I think, vindicated his support.
I actually picture him in like a support group with Bart Giamatti, where both of you are like, "Yeah, our sons are becoming actors. We're literary critics. Our sons are going to this really difficult field. Do you think they'll make it?"
When you look at the state of sci-fi today, you know, all these like big, dumb, loud, like superhero movies, even, you know, the new Alien basically just being just a shoot 'em up in space. Are you, you know, as someone who's, again, not just acted in, but directed it and has a really, really smart feel for it, do you lament this? Do you think we've kind of gone hyper, just hyper stupid, hyper muscular? Or do you see something interesting out there today that you genuinely like?
It's a really good question. I gotta say, to stay in the family a little bit, I really thought that JJ's reboot, the first one, was wonderful. He's a wonderful storyteller, sort of like Spielberg, and I thought that we were in very good hands, and still are in many ways with him. I like the humor, to be perfectly honest, of the like the Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think the Marvel with the tongue in cheek and the wink. I don't mind that that at all. I can't bear the Transformers type movies, but the ones that have a little character and humor.
If you were called upon to direct one big franchise,
I tried to get Star Trek III. I tried desperately to get the one that Justin Lin directed, the third of the JJ's movies.
I really wish you had. Commander, thank you so, so much.
Jonathan Frakes, thank you for being our Gentile of the Week.
Delightful. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Stephanie, you have a live event coming up.
Indeed, I do. I'm so excited. I'm actually moderating a panel with Dean and Maya Jenkelovitz of Jack's Wife Frida at the New York Public Library next Wednesday, June 14th at 6:30. And it's going to be fun. If you listen to our episode, she's really, really great. And Dean's wonderful as well.
Such a good dinner.
What's the date?
The other day?
June 14th.
Place?
Time. Oh, the New York Public Library.
Main branch.
Mid-Manhattan Library.
The main branch. That's across the street from the main branch.
It's across the street from the main branch.
The Mid-Manhattan branch.
The Mid-Manhattan Library.
And you'll be talking food.
Talking food. Schmoozing. Yeah, that'll be fun. You can get more information at nypl.org, and we'll put that in the newsletter.
Fred, do you have any events coming up?
Since you're here, Fred Kerr. We have a live event coming up.
When is it?
Our season finale. Is Saturday evening, June 17th. It's we're doing the season finale as part of an event called Nuit Rose, which is an art festival performance crawl all through downtown Toronto, focusing on LGBT artists and art and performers and all that good stuff. We are doing the season finale live in front of an audience at the 519 Community Center, which is in the Gay Hood at 519 Church Street. So if you are in Toronto or will be in Toronto the weekend of June 17th, come to the 519 Community Center. And actually, they close off the whole Church Street, which is like the main drag through the Gay Hood. And it's a big art party.
And remember, Americans, it takes a passport to get to.
Yes.
As Liel forgot. All right.
I have a question for you. This is really important. You're a New Yorker.
Yes,
Brooklyn. But you live in Canada. You obviously don't live in Montreal, but like, weigh in on the bagel thing. You are in a uniquely situated.
Oh, this is like talking pizza.
I don't remember where you are.
New York. Yeah.
Did you feel like when you moved there, you're like, I have to get on board?
I know I'm supposed to say like New York bagels are the best.
Yeah, you say yes, whatever you want to say.
Absolutely. No. Okay. It's not right, Stephanie.
Okay. The Israeli is pointing his gun at me, telling me I have to say New York. But I do love Montreal bagels as well.
There's something beautiful about them. They're different.
Montreal, I love them.
Still never had
They're
one.
They're a vehicle for...
You've never had one?
Never had one.
You have to have a...
I'll have one sometime.
You have to... I'll meet you in Montreal. We'll have a bagel. We'll have some smoked meat.
We'll have a nosh.
We'll have a nosh.
We'll have a nosh.
If you've never had them, all you have to do is just take a bunch of, just take a bunch of dough and sugar and stuff it in your mouth. And
we'll go to Fairmount Bagels.
Friends, the mailbox. Hello, friends. First off, mazel tov to Stephanie and family on the birth of baby Noah.
Thank you. I accept all congratulations, having done zero to make that baby happen.
After your disparaging comments about good parenting, this was a reference to my saying, no, God parenting, sorry. After your
gay parenting?
Oh my parenting. God, this is the Freudian slip of the century.
Good. After your disparaging comments about God parenting, this is a reference to me having said Jews don't do godmothers and godfathers. That's really goyish. This person writes, I wanted to share the joys and blessings of having Jewish godmothers for my children and myself being a Jewish godmother to 5 children. My family's very small, and I'm the only member of my generation strongly identifying as Jewish. When my first son Ezra was born, I felt the need to have some kind of designated Jewish mentor. So I asked my rabbi, and she explained the traditional Sandek role. I asked if we could expand on this with my lifelong best friend Amy as Sandakit. Rabbi Margaret agreed and wove in Amy's role as Sandakit or Sandakit when saying blessings for Ezra. Ezra is now 18, and the role of Sandakit became part of our familial and spiritual culture. I became Sandakit to Amy's daughter Emily, with Reb Margaret including me in blessing Emily. My second son has Ellen as his Sandakit, also blessed by Rabbi Margaret, yada, 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 yada. Before having Ezra, I also thought godparenting to be solely Christian. But God works in mysterious ways. My youngest goddaughter is Filipina Black Wasp, and her parents decided to bring in her Filipina heritage and asked me to be her ninong. Again, how could I say no? Sincerely, Yarrow Rubin, Elk, California.
You come
like
to me on my daughter's christening. You don't call me Sandakit.
Like, I know in Greek Orthodoxy, because my friend Irene is Greek, she has like the role of godparent, and she's a goddaughter, and she's a godparent, and that's like the person who's responsible for your Greek education. And I like that. I like the idea.
And does anyone in that family actually take that role seriously and be responsible for the Greek education?
I know that they...
No.
Well, at their wedding, your I forget what the word is, like kumbaya or something like
your
that.
Kumbaya.
Like kumbaya. Like there's two, and then they're part
sandwich?
Of your wedding ceremony. So
look,
like,
I don't doubt that they have occasional roles at milestones. I have never, and people can write in mail to the contrary, we have a lot of Gentile listeners, I've never encountered a, quote, godmother or godfather who's really taken the educational role
although
seriously.
I would say, if
what
any
it really
listener,
means is they give gifts.
Mark,
once in a while, they give gifts.
Any listener wants to appoint me godfather to their children, I will make sure that gift gets my kind of Jewish education.
Great.
So if you want that, write in. I'm here.
Have at it. Okay. Next letter. Dear Mark, Stephanie, and Liel, I am a Danish Jewess living in the south of Sweden, working as a journalist in nearby Copenhagen. There's so many things I'd like to tell you, but I'll limit myself to this. Note to Mark, the Swedish word for Jewess, judinna, is the word every Swede uses for Jews of the female sex.
Look at that.
Judinna is completely integrated into the Swedish language. I thought you'd be happy to know that. I am. Okay. Yep. We're bringing Jewess back. Okay. Now she goes on. Question about Jewish names. In one episode of Unorthodox, you all agree that Myron is a universal name for aging Jewish uncles. Apparently, everyone in the U.S. has an old half-deaf Uncle Myron.
Correct.
This includes me, by the way. It made me feel quite a bit of anxiety about my own name, Miriam. Is it considered an old aunt's name? Years ago, an American I knew told me that in the U.S., only old Jewish ladies are called Miriam. Is this true? Yours, Miriam Katz. Not anymore,
disagree.
Miriam. It's so bad.
Let's talk about Miriam Krull. She's,
no, it's 1,000% back.
She's a friend of mine. I think it's back. It's like sort of like Esther. Like these sort of more biblical names are definitely back. I love the idea that in America, someone
Brooklyn.
Said, it's just an old lady's name. As though it was like only ever an old lady's name.
They were never. No, Miriam is 1,000% back, Miriam Katz.
I have to say, though, Miriam works for a website. She says she writes for a Jewish culture website. It's called Goldberg.new.
Who did the Miriam Katz who wrote to us writes for Goldberg.new?
Yeah, so she writes for Goldberg.new.
Goldberg.new.
And I clicked on it. It's amazing. It looks great.
Goldberg.
What language is it in?
It's in Swedish, but there's a few things that are in English, obviously, like the headline Whitefish, Montana, which they're obviously covering the like neo-Nazi stuff there. And then like Shabbat Shalom, Motherfuckers, which is Broad City.
Right.
Like a, with a picture of the girls from Broad City.
Is the new like new?
I don't know. Maybe it's a Swedish
new?
Thing.
Netherlands new? Who's dot NU?
I don't know.
I like better?
Phrasic.
It's new?
New? Yeah.
Goldberg.new?
Tablet.new?
Right,
Tablet.mag.new?
Two more letters. Dear Mark, okay, so remember the person, the woman who wrote in and said, give us a shout out. We're getting married in a couple weeks and we cuddle every Saturday and listen to your show.
Oh, yeah.
So the husband, so the guy wrote in, dear Mark, Stephanie, and Liel, when I heard my then fiance Erin's letter on your show recently, my second thought was how lucky I am to be marrying such a sweet and thoughtful
woman. Hold on, then because they broke up because of this letter?
My first thought was, no, because they got married since then. That's why it's then fiance. My first thought was, shoot, I was just about to do that for her on next week's show with more or less the same message about listening in bed on weekend mornings. I fucking love Jason and Erin. Like, we are actually part of their bedroom routine.
In bed with them.
We are in bed with them. Listening to Unorthodox is such a beloved shared ritual of ours that we were both planning the same surprise. Leave it to a teacher to be more organized than a writer and making the request more promptly.
Also, like a woman more organized than a man.
Also, she loves you more.
Hashtag the future is female.
Yep.
We look forward to enjoying many more great episodes as husband and wife, and we'll at least bring you on our honeymoon in podcast form. Jason Markusoff, Calgary, Alberta.
Oh, wow.
Canadians in the house. So listen, here's the thing, Jason and Erin. Like, there's nothing we won't do for you.
This is the idea of Canadian, like, foreplay.
Yes.
Getting in bed, listening to Unorthodox. It's like, you want to get frisky and wild tonight?
If you
listen
want
to Mark and Stephanie and Leah,
you tell us
Canadian accent ever.
So are you going to have like, are they going to end up being like Unorthodox babies?
Yeah, we are going to be the Sanduk and Sanduk Keep to their kids. We're also like, if there's music you need to get you in the mood,
Noah will
drop that in.
Guys, basically, we're here for you for whatever you want. We're here for the long haul. Tell us what you need in the bedroom. And we'll make it happen.
I love that this is just like, we're here for the long haul, but only in the bedroom.
Of course.
You ain't got no inside.
All right, two more quickies. Katie Forsyth writes, I'd like to give a shout out to my dear friend Kevin Lieberman. This incredible human introduced me to Unorthodox, for which I'm grateful. My mom makes fun of him for being a Jew named Kevin, but then I remind my mom that she named me Catherine Maureen Forsyth. But her maiden name is Greenberg, so we're all good. Katie Forsyth. And finally, on Facebook, Deborah Sarna writes in response to last week's episode, quote, Stephen Tobolowsky befriended my father-in-law in the shul they both attended when my father-in-law was saying Kaddish after my mother-in-law's death. Stephen and my father-in-law, Abe, got to know each other well. He invited my father-in-law to his wedding, and Stephen featured him on his radio show. Stephen's friendship and the time he shared with Abe were truly a blessing. I look forward to reading Stephen's book.
God bless.
Deborah Sarna, God bless you. Some mazel tovs. Fred Kerr.
Yes.
Do you have a mazel tov as long as you're here? Anyone you want to give a shout out to?
Like a good Jewish boy, I'm going to give a shout out to my mother.
Yeah.
Because the other day, she said, I was talking to her on the— I'm going to get all Brooklyn while I talk about this.
That's okay.
I was talking to her on the phone, and she was telling me she can't stand Trump. And my father's like a big Trumpy, but I can't stand Trump, and I really can't stand Ivanka. Did you know she converted? She said to me.
Did you know?
I said, yes, yes. Yeah, she's more Jewish than I am, my mother said. I still hate her.
It's the old joke, you know, what's the old, a year old joke? What's the difference between Donald Trump and Reformed Jews? Donald Trump has Jewish grandchildren.
No.
Whoa.
Damn, that is hostile.
Wow.
I went there.
Dark.
So, mazel tov to your mother.
Mazel tov to my mother.
Mazel tov to your mother.
Stefania. I got a mazel tov to listener Jeffrey Grossman from Redmond, Washington. He and I correspond. He ran a teen tour program that was in the town of Great Neck. I think I talked about my teen tour a few weeks back. And I went on Rhine, and he worked for American Trails West. And he picked up on a joke I made two episodes ago when you guys were talking about Alaska and how they have to leave, the senators have to leave for all the tourists. And I was like, yeah, Fire and Ice, which is the name of the Alaska-Hawaii teen tour. And he got it. And he wrote in and told me that.
Mazel
and it turns out he named that teen tour.
That is...
God bless him.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Deep Butnick knowledge.
Inside.
Liel?
Deep Butnick.
My Deep Butnick knowledge. My mazel tov is to a beloved friend of this show, H. Allen Scott, who right now, as we speak, at this very moment, do you know where H. Allen is?
He's in Israel.
Right now.
Are you single?
He's in the Kotel.
No. Oh,
well, he's
H.
married.
Allen's looking.
Because he's another gay guy.
No,
and
isn't he married?
Yes.
No, H. Allen's single.
Is he?
Yeah. Jalen's single.
Do you know how many people have said to me, oh, you're gay? I know somebody else who's gay. Do you know him?
Well, it said H. Allen is Jewish and handsome, and I do this for everyone. It's not just like all two gay people belong together. It's really not. I actually have made several straight marriages. Like,
well, you know, he's in the Kotel right now, and I bet you he's writing his wish, and may all of his wishes come true.
H. Allen's in the promised land right,
right now. He's in the Kotel right now as we
speak.
Chronicling
it on Instagram and on Facebook, H. Allen Scott.
He's touching that wall.
God, he is.
He's building that wall.
Unorthodox all-star H. Allen Scott. Fred, you're an unorthodox all-star, by the way, too.
Oh, thank you.
No one's ever gotten there that fast. You made it in 40 minutes. My mazel tov, speaking of Instagram, my mazel tov is to me. I got off Facebook and Twitter this week. Haven't been on for 5-6 days.
Wow.
And it's like, I feel so liberated. Like the extra time in my day.
Hold on, but Mike, you didn't do the thing that you're supposed to do, which is announcing.
Announcing. I'm going off the Twitter. I did personal news.
I just vamoosed. I just pieced out of there.
Like, question for you.
So here's the thing. Yeah, question.
So Twitter is obviously annoying, and it's just sort of a way to get inundated with news and commentary. But you use Facebook in a different way than I do. Like, you use it for like, hey, I'm looking for this. Does
I will crowdsource stuff.
You'll crowdsource. So I'm actually surprised that you are not using Facebook, because I feel like that is a resource for you in a lot of ways.
It is, and especially as a journalist, there are times when it's like, hey, does anyone know anyone who has a friend who has a friend who is like an ex-Jew who became a Sikh who now lives in Evergreen, Washington? Mm-hmm. I need that person
so
for a story.
So I imagine that that's what your feed looks like.
But
people looking – like mine is just like pictures of people having babies.
My feed's a lot of that. It's a lot of people having babies. It's, you know, the difference between your feed and my feed is second marriages. Like, that's 15 years later.
That's what I have to look forward to.
And honestly, though, I mean, I'm not saying I'll never go on. I will pop back on de temps en temps. Like, I will be on for maybe every other Friday or something just to check in and say – but it's totally – I don't miss it at all. Twitter especially is just like – you know, Alana Newhouse, our boss, always says Twitter is for racists and journalists.
That's exactly right.
And those are two really annoying groups of people.
And racist journalists.
And racist journalists. And it's like, fuck all y'all. And like, honestly, I've read like 3 novels in the 5 days since I got
off.
Look
at Mark.
It's just,
and to be honest, you haven't missed anything.
Nothing.
Mark is all toxic masculinity. I love it.
Yeah. Fred, actually, I have a question.
Yeah.
It's a Yid question.
This is going to be the final word of the show before credits, by the way. So make it good.
Okay. Okay, so you asked if I'm single. My partner is a Gentile. Can I still use the word shiksa?
Oh, ooh. Wow. Is there
for him?
Yeah.
No, it's shagets.
Oh, shagets.
Oh, is it? Okay.
There's a word. Shagets, and it means
but he could have.
You can call it. Yeah, I mean, it's
which one means worm?
It's kind of funny.
Kind of gay to call it your shiksa. I mean, that's your Jewish girl.
It's a little campier.
Look
like
at the expression on his face when he did that.
I know. He really is.
He really
which one means worm?
Shagets. So the word for a Jewish, the mildly derogatory word for a non-Jewish male is shagets, which means like vermin or worm.
Oh, great.
Mildly derogatory.
Shiksa has more like
worm.
Glam.
That's kind of dirty.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a little sexy.
You can make use of that.
Go with that.
Hey, gang, I know that you're expecting me to slide right into the credits now, but not quite yet. I have a favor to ask. In a few weeks, we're doing a special summer camp episode, and we want you to be, you know, a part of it. I mean, you're always a part of things because you send us mail and you send us ideas, and you're an incredibly engaged audience, and that makes our show all the better. And we love the extended J. Crew and the family that you are. But listen, we need something specific. Do you have any special summer camp reminiscences? Like, maybe you have a lost love you want to tell us about. Maybe you want to track him or her down. Maybe you want to send a shout out to that crazy bunkmate who made it all worthwhile. Maybe you just want to complain and kvetch and say that summer camp was horrible and you want to name names. Maybe you want to talk about what a wonderful place it was and how sad you are that it went under. Listen, the goal of this episode will just be like summer camp and the American experience, or the American Jewish experience, if you will. So send us your stories, send us your reminiscences, try to keep them, you know, to 300 words or fewer. We would love it if you wanted to send something on audio. You can email us a little, you know, audio bite at our email, which, as you know, is unorthodox@tabletmag.com. And listen, if you have friends who are being a little shy, but they have great stories, you know, send us their name. We'll bother them. We'll track them down and shame them into it. But stay tuned. It's going to be an amazing episode, and you need to be part of it. Send us your stuff at unorthodox@tabletmag.com. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine, on the web at tabletmag.com. Our executive producers are Alyssa Goldstein and Shira Talushkin, and our show is edited by Noah Levinson. Our music is by Golem. Rabbinic supervision this week by Rabbi Barry Marks of Springfield, Illinois. Kosher Slaughtering is by Sarah Huckabee Sanders. We record at Argo Studios, which has already formed an exploratory committee for the 2018 campaign season. We're proud to be part of the Panoply Network. Shalom, friends.